Okay, perfect. So, what happens in modernity is this. And this is, again, structure of the course. This is very intentional. For antiquity, God is the center. Okay? What follows and immediately is considered is God as creator. So there's a world, right? A creator makes a world. It's an intrinsic attribute. But the ultimate cause is God. And so the world then is presented and presents itself to me. So the relation is as the arrows are here. God affects the world. Can you see my cursor moving? Yes, okay. God affects the world, and the world affects me. And this is the classic worldview. What modernity does slowly, and this is not modernity, modernity is not an agent, but what slowly happens is because of the philosophical refinement and many, many causes, we talked about some of them, my relationship to the world changes. And I showed you what I consider the most pivotal point in that change. The most pivotal point in that change is that my intellect becomes co-causal as to its object. This is in SCOTUS, the very section that I had you read. The question was, is the intellect or the object cause of my knowledge? He goes through all of these, all of his dear friends, mainly arguing against Henry of Ghent. He comes up with what he thinks is the media via, so the middle ground between two extremes, between a complete immanentism, a nominalism, and a Augustinianism, if you want to. The two extremes, and the middle way is both. The world is caused, my knowledge of the world is caused partly by the object, partly by the world, and partly by me. And I told you that, and I double down on this. This is a very un-Aristotelian step because Aristotle does not have co-causality. Now, you have four causes. I just told you 1 minute ago that all of them are present in all things. So there is, of course, a co-causality, but not with the same object, or to say it more precisely, not at the same time in the same mode. That would be a violation against the principle of non-contradiction. So yes, of course, my intellect is a cause of my knowledge, but not in the way that SCOTUS wants it to be co-causal with the object. Okay, so this is represented here in the second line. So God is first. Come on, just by making it. God is first. Then there is the world, and then there's me, but my relation to the world changes qualitatively. Modernity starts here. Modernity starts with my relation to the world, not my relation to God, as I've worked out, but my relation to the world. And this happens roughly at the end of the Middle Ages. Now, again, you have foreshadowing of that. You have different types of manifestations of that already before Middle Ages. But when we talk about Western philosophy, this is what we focus on. This shift paradigmatically sets then the world and God apart. And this is what happens in the third line here. God becomes less important, not because his relation to me, this would be the time where the distance to God is mostly bridged by mysticism. So we talk about the Rhine school of mysticism. We talk generally any kind of mystical speculation. We talked about Cusanus, kind of his mystical Platonism, this whole idea of dissolving yourself in the divine ground. Right? There's a lot of occult thought as well in the 16th and 17th century. I gave the example of people like Newton as well. That's a little bit earlier, or Galileo, Newton more so, that create a completely mechanized world, so spending most of their time with the world, but then realizing that the relation between the eye and God is disturbed, and thus infuse that with some kind of occult or magical thought. So in my opinion, as I showed you, Isaac Newton is a great example of that, who does not want to live in that mechanized world that he puts the eye into. Okay, and so God, and so I bracket God here, because God becomes less important. It is all the central relation is between me and the world. And so then what happens, and this is one of the elements that clearly happens in modernity, is that, well, God is just forgotten. Not necessarily immediately denied. He is forgotten first. Deism, right? He's a God that creates. So the scholastic framework of intrinsic qualities of the creator is still upheld. But now it's not tied to being anymore. And if it's tied to being, then it's a being that we effectively cannot know, we don't really understand how he affects the world now, because the world seems to be in a complete closed system of mechanical, biological, mechanical, chemical functions, okay, and we are as well. And so what happens at the same time is the splitting up of the self, right, into matter and form. So the I now starts being deconstructed. And so this is actually then the next step, and this is how far we went the other day when I just posted this in the chat. Because what happens now, so this is basically, properly speaking, modernity. This is the 17th, 18th century, early 19th century, properly modernity speaking. What happens in the contemporary time, so everything really after the world wars, and this is warranted partly because just the general scientific optimism is a little bit halted by nuclear warfare, but then also by the limits of physics that our dear friends and kind of the quantum theorists come to, realizing that, well, once we observe a particle, we have to change it to the degree that then we cannot really know what the particle is in itself. So what Einstein on an atomic, subatomic level of reality found, and the conclusions he came to, is exactly the same framework than the hermeneutic game of me and the object, and how much is it me and how much is it the object? How much of the particle object do I have to change, I, the self, in order to know it? And can I actually know the particle in itself? And so here is the null point of the immanence of modernity. So the null point, the zero point, the dead end, the ultimate cul-de-sac, the mental cul-de-sac, so to speak, of the properly modern mindset comes with the limits of scientific research. So on the one hand, the physicists, you have Einstein, you have Heisenberg, all of those guys in the 20s, the 1920s, early, like 1914 to 1921, and then a little bit later as well. Okay, so you come to the null point scientifically, where they say, we still don't understand matter, because the more we get to the null point of matter, the more we realize matter doesn't exist. Number one. And the other side is the null point of system thinking, which is put in by the mathematician Kurt Gödel. I haven't really spoken about him a lot, but I may as well do it now. Kurt Gödel, and this is extremely complicated, so I'm not going to bore you with the details, even though there's a very good short YouTube video that explains it. I give my undergraduates to watch. You can just Google it. It's the incompleteness theorems. And so especially the incompleteness theorems, and mind you, Gödel was a very good mathematician, but he did starve himself to death because he had a neurosis, thinking that people wanted to poison him. So he just effectively ended up not eating anything because his wife passed, who always was his tester. Very tragic story, but that's besides the point. Most mathematicians at that level are a little bit gaga. So Gödel showed with the second incompleteness theorem effectively that no system can produce the guarantor. No system can out of itself produce the guarantor of its own validity, which he shows us mathematically on like 17 pages. It's actually not that long, very complicated. But what he shows that mathematically, so no system is self-reliant. And with that, that is in that one mathematical paper, all of modernity is completely shattered. The Cartesian self is shattered. The mechanized world is shattered. The only thing that remains is God. But God is gone. God is a question mark. So what is there to what's left to do? Nothing. And that is, pun intended, nihilism. So what happens? So okay, the only thing is to do is nihilism. Obviously, okay, we're gonna sit in the corner and sulk. I don't know. Wear black clothes. Become goths, right? Black clothes, black eyeliner. Go to cemeteries and be really sad about life. No, obviously that's not what happens. That's not the logical conclusion. And what happens is the remaining factors, now that God is gone, who could be the only one that is saved from the incompleteness theorem, is we look at the structure of the world in the eye. And so we slowly deconstruct those. So what actually happens, and I'm maybe going out on a limb here a little bit, but what happens is the world remains. What is constructed, deconstructed rather, is the eye. It could look something like this. And this is part of the great myth of modernity that I've already repeated multiple times. The myth that when you get rid of something, it is actually gone. The reality is when you get rid of something in this trifecta of things, God, world, or I, and this applies to many other realms of life as well, when you get rid of something, it is replaced by something else. It's not gone. Plain and simple. So what happens is the I undergoes the exact treatment that God underwent earlier. So it is bracketed. What we left with, there's a lot of questions coming up. I want to finish this. Is what? Now I'm going to say this as a German, so take me with a grain of salt. I say this a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but environmentalism, that's what that is. If the world remains as the last instance of non-destructible, and it has been deconstructed, it has been dissolved into its components in science. So the world actually doesn't exist, but most individuals cannot follow the steps of that, technically speaking. So what is left with is the world. And so the only thing that's left with is the world. And so what do you do when you're left with one thing? You start to venerate it. That is why environmentalism is a pseudo-religion. And it has pseudo-religious characteristics. It requires rituals. It has a transcendent end. It puts self-sacrifice in the center. And it has a coterie of elite priests who preach it. Okay. This structure, this framework works, or this understanding works in many other realms. I'm just picking one, which is environmentalism. You can also use it in like this kind of Marxist framework, does the same thing. The I is deconstructed into the economic framework, right? Good example that I always like to bring up is poverty breeds terrorism. That is a myth. Poverty does not breed terrorism. Most of the very effective terrorists are, in fact, not just rich, but millionaires. Okay. And they become ideologues. That's what breeds terrorism, not poverty. Most poor people are too busy trying to find a piece of bread to not starve to death that very day than to think, okay, how can I actually read a sword to bomb myself to death? Okay? And most of those poor people are not drawn in by the wealth that, suicide bombing brings you, but rather by the illusion imposed on them by others. Okay, so this is the steps of modernity, right? And so I'm leaving out the errors on this kind of meta level here, with a reason. And the reason for that is, and I can maybe put a little question mark here in this arrow, or it should be like a, one, a dotted line arrow, because there is no more relationship. There's no more relationality. This is what Taylor strongly suggests with his disembedding, right? And the disenchantment. The disenchantment happens early. The disenchantment happens when the world gets the question mark. But the disembedding happens because now everything is separate from one another. People call it nominalism because the words are separate from another without any relation. You can call it that. You can call it disembedding. It's the same. The idea is the same. The idea is that everything exists in isolation on itself, on its own, for itself, in relation to itself. And the only relation that it has to the externals is one of like structural composition, meaning that you can dissolve one point into another. So it becomes completely fluid, homogeneous oneness, and that is the world. So if you say, okay, but that's kind of what Spinoza already said, yeah, I would say you are probably right. You can say, well, that's kind of like the Leibnizian monad on steroids. It's like, yeah, you're probably right. Or that is, or the Hegelian absolute spirit. I would say, yeah, that is probably right. And all of these examples, Spinoza, Hegel, Leibniz, and others, they're all modern. And I'm not saying that like they subscribe to something, to a modern belief. I'm saying that because they cannot understand how subject and object are integrated in themselves and into a greater whole. Subject, I, object, world, greater whole, God. Because they don't, because for them, the separation is between the I and the world, and the relationship is causal, and the relationship is from me to the world, not the world to me. And then the different shades of the different varieties of the negation of God, world, and I are basically explained in each of these relationships by how they relate. So if you would say, I hope I can come up with some examples in this moment. But if you would say, well, the world is related to me as causal, but there's no God, then you would probably have more of this kind of Gnostic, neo-paganist idea of the world being, well, what should be the place of God. If you say, I am the proper arbiter of truth in the world, then you would be more of a subjectivist, individualist, probably utilitarian. Is there somebody that just speaks about God in this modern context? Yeah, like kind of modern transcendental occultists. Okay, so you have occultism. And I mean, we say occultism and we like, oh yeah, this kind of this relic of the past, people believed in magic once. Oh, how silly of them. Ritual sacrifices are happening today in Western society, okay? Symbolically, physically, really, okay? I go to an Oxford college and I have a picture of Abramovich, that kind of American, Russian-American witch on the wall right outside the senior common room. And these are not, these are real things. These are not kind of made up stories, right? So there's a real occult strand, which is really, it has all of the qualifications of magic, of superstition, of, you have the rise of Wicca, you have the rise of this weird kind of feminist witchcraft. Okay, all of that is basically the substitute of a truly divine in this godless world. So it's trying to fill the question mark that I put here. In modernity. So that was, why am I giving you all of these examples? I give you these examples to illustrate that the different shades of modern and modernist philosophies and theologies, if you can call them that, you cannot really call them that. So let's call them philosophies. Philosophies arise by how the world and the I are configured in relation to one another. Right? Which is first, which is second, how do they relate, how does one participate in the other, and what other factors are like added on, right, to make, to give a richer picture of reality. And then that's, that happens also with God, even though I'm leaving God out of here, because obviously it's not really dealing with God, it's all a substitute. So it will eventually just contract into the world. What magic is effectively the veneration of natural powers. Okay, I'm going to stop talking now, because there's a lot of hands up, I think, and a lot of questions. So, Eljoy, I still have not answered your